Joining me right now here on the Knock On Sports to talk college football from GoForTheTwo.com, it is my friend Joe Lisi. Joe, how you doing, my friend?
Brand new year. 2018 is here, but we've had a great 2017 college football season.
That it has, and it's been a pretty good bowl season as well. And Joe, before we get to the college football playoff, two conferences I want to get your thoughts on with this, because it was pretty much polar opposite. The Big Ten Conference had a great bowl season. Only one loss, and that was to Michigan losing to South Carolina. But other than that, the Big Ten really rebounded. Even though they didn't have a team in the college football playoff, they had eight wins in the bowl season.
Yeah, I mean, a great season for the Big Ten. The only team to lose within the conference was Michigan to South Carolina on New Year's Day. But, I mean, overall, I mean, the teams, the better half of the team stepped up, and the teams at the bottom half of the division won their bowl games. I think it just really epitomizes college football, Anthony. You see conferences like the ACC last year that led the bowl season with nine wins, national championship in the Clemson Tigers, and then this year taking a slight step back. So it's the ebbs and flows of college football, players moving on to the NFL, and some will argue that that's why the expanded playoffs should be, you know, there for college football. But it's just what makes college football so great. When you look at the flip side of the Pac-12, a very disappointing season. When you look at the quarterback class that is there, and Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen moving on to the NFL draft, you also have Jake Browning from Washington. All three of those teams couldn't step up and win their respective bowl games. A very disappointing year for the Pac-12 overall, and quite frankly, they deserve to be on the outside looking in for the college football playoff.
No doubt about it. And here's the question too, Joe. I mean, how does the Pac-12 even, I mean, do they even get somebody in the top five, or does anyone look going into next year that could be a team that might be able to be in the conversation for the college football playoff? Because for the Pac-12 to be out of it multiple years, not a good look.
No, it's not a good look at all. And it really comes down to the offense and defensive line play within the conference as a whole. I mean, that's been what really has been the Achilles heel for the conference in recent years and throughout the past decade. Even though USC dominated under Pete Carroll, the Achilles heel for the Pac-12 was always a blue-collar mentality. And quite frankly, when you look at the teams this year within the conference that couldn't step up, and you have more finesse type of offenses, and teams that couldn't stop the run. You look at a team in UCLA that allowed 287 rushing yards per game in 2017. That's a main reason why the conference lost as many games as they did. From a physicality perspective, they just didn't step up on the defensive side of the ball. And unfortunately, I don't think they all have a top team in the top 10 this year. You can make the argument maybe for USC because of the talent that they recruit. But all in all, I don't see another team, maybe Washington, because of Jake Browning, if he's there, being in the top 10. But outside of that, I think it's going to be a very difficult year in 2018 at the start for the Pac-12 Conference.
Joe, another team I want to get your thoughts on, as we talked about them before, was UCF. They did get the win over Auburn. Now there's a lot of hoopla. They're going to hang a national championship banner and things of that nature, have a parade as well. What do you make of the entire situation with UCF?
Great season for UCF and the Knights overall. I think the job that Scott Frost has done with that program in turning it around in just 2 years, they were 0-12, could not run the football. And then 2 years later, they're 13-0, they're conference champs, and they knock off SEC West opponent Auburn that was 10-2 overall and knocked off both Alabama and Georgia at home. That being said, Anthony, I don't think they're deserving of being in the college football playoff. Again, I don't want to see the expanded past four teams. I understand the argument on any given Saturday or on any given day, UCF, as well as any team in the country, could knock off a top 10 opponent or could be knocked off. That being said, I think if UCF played in a Power 5 conference and had to play the type of teams each and every week from a physicality perspective, I'm not so sure the Knights would be undefeated. So I think that's the argument. When you look at the teams outside the Power 5 conference, I think that's the argument that has to be made. If they played a Power 5 schedule, would they be, in fact, undefeated like they are? And unless the chips fall perfectly, I think they're deserving of being in the outside looking in.
Well, Joey, here's the thing, and I want to kind of get your thoughts on this, because I thought there were some interesting points about this, because UCF had a special team this year. There's no question, going from what they were 2 years ago, a very special team. We've seen teams like this before, a Boise State who takes down Oklahoma. So here's my question. How do we look at teams that are outside the Power Five that do have like a special season going on, but at the same time, they can't keep that kind of... They can't keep this up consistently year in and year out like a Bama or a Clemson or some of the teams in the Power Five. Is there a way to try and reward teams like this that do have those special seasons to try and get them an opportunity to take on some of these Power Five teams, do you think?
I understand the argument, and again, it's been a great season, and you bring up that year and with the Fiesta Bowl against Oklahoma, Boise State, dramatic fashion, knocking off a Big 12 opponent in the Oklahoma Sooners. But I'll say this, Anthony. If we do that expansion in the playoffs, the regular season will be non-existent, will be much like college basketball. And when you look at the argument for teams, let's go back to 2004, an undefeated Utah team that knocked off Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. I mean, they're just as deserving then of the national championship. In 1998, Tulane was undefeated with head coach Tommy Bowden and quarterback Sean King. They're deserving of the national championship as well, with Tennessee and Peerless Price and T. Martin and knocking off Florida State. So the argument could be there each and every season throughout the decades. Teams that are probably worthy of a national championship run, like UCF this year, but it's what makes college football great. The controversy is part of the debate, and which makes the season so intriguing, because at the end of the year, we're still talking about it. So it's not a perfect formula. It's not the NFL. We have a true champion per se each and every year. And that's why we're watched from week number one straight through the playoffs.
My featured guest is Joe Lisi from GoForTheTube.com, and we are talking college football. And Joe, let's break down those college football playoff games, and let's start with the one that was probably the most exciting, which was Oklahoma and Georgia going to double overtime. Were you surprised at all by the score?
Yeah, as high scoring as it was, I thought Georgia could run the football the way they did against Oklahoma's front seven, but I thought Georgia could win the ball game in the area of about 34 to 37 to 24 in that area. I really thought that Georgia needed to really dictate the tempo in the first half, and they weren't able to do that. That being said, credit both teams for the way they played. Oklahoma with a great first half from Baker Mayfield and Rodney Anderson jumping up and dictating the tempo early in the first half, and it looked like they'd run away with that ball game. But you have to credit Kirby Smart and defensive coordinator Mel Tucker for halftime adjustments, and I think that's where Kirby Smart showed his experience, not as just a head coach, but as a coordinator that has been there with Nick Saban in national championship atmospheres. And you had a first-year head coach in Lincoln Riley that just went status quo in the second half, going and possibly quite conservative in terms of the second half approach in the overtime period. So I felt that the Georgia defense did a fantastic job in the second half of getting pressure on Baker Mayfield. They did mix up coverages and mixed up the front sevens in terms of blitz packages, and that's why Georgia was able to dictate the tempo, because the rushing attack, 317 rushing yards, averaging 9.3 yards per carry, was a phenomenal effort. But if Georgia takes that type of approach against Alabama, I think they'll lose that type of ball game. They only converted 3 of 11 third down conversions, even though Jake Fromm completed 20 of 29 passes. They're going to need to be much more aggressive against Alabama in order to pull off the national championship.
Well, Joe, let's take a look at, like you talked about, with Alabama and Clemson. I thought the determining factor here, I know a lot of people want to point at Deshaun Watson, but I kind of felt like Kelly Bryant, if he didn't see his first read, it seemed like his head went down and he was trying to run the football. Did that look like it was for you as well?
Yeah, I think when you break down the Alabama team overall, again, I think the way you have to beat Alabama is you have to attack them vertically. You have to attack them on seam routes and post patterns and dig patterns to really neutralize their speed. If you're going to run or pass sideline to sideline on Alabama, you're going to go right into their defensive strength. That being said, when you look at the offensive game plan for Clemson, they attacked on hitch routes, they attacked on slant patterns, which allowed those linebackers and cornerbacks to jump routes, and they were forced into third down and long situations. That's where Clemson really struggled, and that's where Kelly Bryant line, did not show his experience or maturity as a pocket passer, much like Deshaun Watson. I think the play calling factored into that. When you look at the flip side for Alabama, as dominant as they were, it was the defensive front, and more importantly, that defense that forced turnovers. They had two. They won the turnover battle. They entered that ball game against Clemson plus 12 in turnover margin, which really allowed their team to dictate the tempo in the second half. But you look at the offense overall, they only passed for 120 yards against Clemson. And again, they're going to need a better effort going up against a very speedy, fast, physical defense in Georgia to pick up this victory Monday night. I think if they take that type of approach against the Georgia Bulldogs offensively, I think Alabama could be in for a long day. I think the one thing when you look at Alabama's offense overall, Anthony, you look at the rushing attack. The first seven games of the year, they averaged 302 yards on the ground. The last seven games, they only averaged 213 yards per game. And more importantly, those were against defenses like LSU, Mississippi State, and Auburn. So I think they're going to need a better effort on the ground to open up play action and keep Jalen Hurts out of third down and long situations to beat Georgia on Monday night. So it's a very intriguing battle against two SEC teams in the Mercedes-Benz Dome.
Joe, let me get your thoughts on that. Do you think having an all-SEC national championship hurts college football?
I don't think it does, Anthony. Let's keep in mind that, you know, both teams have only squared off around four or five times over the past decade because of the rotation factor, Georgia being on in the East, Alabama being in the West. It's been rare instances where the Bulldogs and Crimson Tide have met. If it was Alabama, LSU, Alabama, Auburn, Alabama, Mississippi, something like that, or Alabama, Tennessee, I could see where ratings might be down. But let's keep in mind, 4 years ago when Aaron Murray was there with Mark Rick, Georgia was stopped on the five-yard line in the SEC championship game. They played a couple of years ago with Jay Coker, and Alabama dominated that matchup between the hedges, which ultimately really led to Mark Rick being fired from Athens and moving on. So I think when you look at that matchup overall, I mean, teams don't square off each and every year, and clearly Alabama was the best team in the West, and Georgia was the best team in the SEC East. So I'm intrigued to see how this game plays out, and I think it's must-watch television if you're a college football fan.
Joe, one of the things that I wanted Oklahoma to win. I thought Oklahoma matches up better against Bama because they can stretch the field. They can send vertical routes. They've got the guys on the outside to do so. But Georgia's going to be the team that's going to face them. Do you think Georgia has enough in the passing game to try and stretch this defense?
Yeah, great point, Anthony, because I agree with you. I think if Georgia goes there and runs on first and second down and puts Jake Fromm into long third down situations, they're going to lose that type of matchup. I can understand why people wanted to see Oklahoma with the type of offense that Baker Mayfield runs in Norman. I agree with you. I think they're going to have to be much more aggressive with their wide receivers, Wames and Terry Godwin. But I also think it's the running backs and the short to intermediate passing game that Georgia could be effective. And I think it's not so much how many times you pass, but when you pass. If you play action on first and second down and really attack Alabama through the passing game on those downs, you'll loosen up the front seven, which ultimately will open up running lanes later in the ballgame for those running backs of Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. And I think that's the type of approach that Georgia must take against Alabama in order to win this ballgame. They have the type of personnel to challenge Alabama. Different type of offense, but they utilize the tight end as well. The Nauta, they have Jeff Blazevic as well that haven't been really utilized in the last few games. Expect them to be a part of the game plan as well. Expect the Wildcat, which you saw in the overtime period, to be a factor as well. They can pass out of that. There's a couple of different ways that Georgia can attack, but they need to be aggressive in the early downs to take the pressure off the offensive line in run blocking, and more importantly, their young quarterback, Jake Fromm.
Joe, my final question for you, which defensive line would you give the edge to get after the quarterback? Would it be Alabama or Georgia?
Well, I would give Georgia, and maybe I'm talking my side here, but I like the speed of Georgia in terms of Roquan Smith. I like Bellamy. I like Lorenzo Carter. Those edge rushers, to me, are the difference in this ballgame going up against the mobility of Jalen Hurts on the perimeter. I think that's the difference that I see in terms of the defensive front sevens. Alabama, dominant defensive front, without a doubt, and they stepped up against Kelly Bryant. But again, I would still take Georgia's group. not just in pass, not just in run blocking, run support, excuse me, but in pass coverage. The way they were able to cover those backs in the second half of that matchup really ultimately led to Georgia winning this ballgame. And when you look at outside of Calvin Ridley, there is not a complement go-to wide receiver. They have Jerry Jeudy, but the second leading receiver on Alabama's team is running back Bo Scarborough. So the linebackers at Georgia in pass coverage are the difference to me, and that's why I like Georgia to win this matchup. I think it's high scoring, though. I'm going 34-27. Bulldogs bark all the way to a national championship.
I like that prediction. We'll make mine here in a little bit as well. For the national championship game Monday night, Joe Lisi, my featured guest from GoForTheTwo.com. Joe, if they want to follow your work, how can they do it?
They can follow me on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. That's the number two. They can go to my website, GoForTheTwo.com, and they can follow my TV show on Dish Network tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., channel 262, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific, Anthony.
Joe, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Look forward to recapping the national championship with you next week, my friend. Hope you have a good one.
You too, Anthony. You love the show. Love talking college football with you.